Revelation chapter 17, we want to begin reading at verse 1, New King James Version, read down to 6 or 7 as we begin to make our comments again. I want to read this that we went over last Wednesday evening for the sake of context. Up to this point in time, we have seen that much of what we have studied already in times past is coming together, and is beginning to enlighten us a little bit to that which we have learned before as we put all of this together. So, Revelation chapter 17, beginning in verse 1, "Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, 'Come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication.' So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her head a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement." We'll end our reading there and pick up in just a moment further comments in verse 7, Revelation 17, and in verse 7. At the opening remarks of this particular chapter, we see two individuals introduced to us again. The beast, of course, that the woman is riding on, we've identified all the way back to chapter 13, the beast that rose up out of the sea, the Roman Empire. The woman sitting on the beast, we've identified as the city of Jerusalem. Now, some, of course, would say the beast is the Roman Empire and the woman is Rome. They have Rome sitting on the Roman Empire. But we noted last Wednesday evening in our study that the context clearly makes a distinction between the woman and the beast. So the woman can't be Rome and the beast be the Roman Empire, because Rome is the Roman Empire. You know, a capital city of a nation is the nation. And so the woman in the context is clearly distinct from the beast, and the beast is clearly distinct from the woman. We'll continue to see that in our study tonight. I want to pick up and read on at verse 6. I believe we ended with this passage last Wednesday evening. "And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of martyrs of Jesus, and I saw her. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement." So the woman, whoever it is drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Now think about what we're reading. Are martyrs of Jesus not saints? And are saints not martyrs of Jesus? So evidently there must be somebody different other than just the martyrs of Jesus. I want to suggest to you that the saints under consideration are the Old Testament saints that were murdered by Israel, by the Jewish people. And then the blood of the martyrs of Jesus are those saints that would be murdered after Jesus was sacrificed for the sins of mankind. This goes all the way back to Revelation chapter 6 about those souls underneath the altar. Let me remind you, Revelation 6 and verse 9, "And when he opened the fifth seal," note this, "I saw under the altar the souls of those who'd been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, 'How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth or dwell upon the land?' And then a white robe was given to each of them." Why was a white robe given to them? Because they had died before Jesus had shed his blood. So their souls underneath the altar. They'd been slain for the word of God And after they're slain, a white robe is given to them. But note what he said. And it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer. Note this. Until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren would be killed as they were was completed. Their fellow servants and their brethren are New Testament saints. They're the martyrs of Jesus. So those are the two groups that we have here. I saw the woman drunk with the blood of saints, the Old Testament saints, and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. The two groups underneath the altar. So the Old Testament saints murdered by apostate Israel are told to wait a little while longer until martyrs of Jesus are also have their blood shed along with them. Now, this ought to be very familiar to us, and we ought to be able to piece this puzzle together, because Jesus said in Matthew 23 and in verse 29, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tomb of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, if we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them," note this, "in the blood of the prophets. Therefore you are witnesses against yourself that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up then the measure of your father's guilt. Serpents, brood of vipers, how can you escape the condemnation of hell? Therefore indeed I send you prophets, wise men and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city. That, in order that, so that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, upon the land, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and an altar. Assuredly, I say to you, all of these things will come upon this generation. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together, as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I say to you, you will see me no more till you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So Jesus said, all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, all the righteous blood shed upon the earth is going to be held against the inhabitants in the city of Jerusalem. And it would take place upon that generation then living. And so Revelation 17 and verse 6, I saw the woman drunk with the blood of saints and with the martyrs of Jesus. Who is the woman? I believe the woman is Jerusalem. It's apostate Israel. That's who's under consideration. Remember in our study of the Gospel of John, John 16 and verse 1, Jesus said to his apostles, these things I've spoken to you that you should not be made to stumble. They will put you out of the synagogues. Yes, the time is coming that whoever kills you will think that he offers God service. And these things they will do to you because they have not known the Father nor me. And so we only need to read through the book of Acts and see who it was that was shedding the blood of the righteous. When you read through the book of Acts, who's shedding the blood of the righteous? It's not Gentiles, it's not Rome, it's unbelieving Jews. We might start with Stephen in Acts chapter 7 and go from there. What about all the blood that Paul and those who aligned themselves with him, that they shed of the righteous? And so I saw the woman drunk with the blood of saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Blood of the martyrs of Jesus couldn't be anybody except those who were martyred after the death of Christ on the cross for their sins. Christians martyred in the first century by apostate Israel. Revelation 17 and in verse 7. But the angel said to me, why did you marvel? You know, at the end of verse 6, John said, I marveled with great amazement. And then the angel asked him why he marveled. Well, we're not told why he marveled, so we could only speculate. It may have been that John recognizes the city under consideration as Jerusalem and is amazed that it has fallen so far. Other than that, I'm not sure why he would have been amazed and marveled at what had been revealed to him. Revelation 17 and verse 7. And the angel said to me, "Why did you marvel? I will tell you," note this, he's going to tell him the mystery. A mystery is something hidden, but he's going to reveal it, so it's not going to be a mystery anymore. "I will tell you the mystery," note this, "of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has seven heads and ten horns." Now, I want you to see the distinction there. He's going to tell him the mystery of the woman and of the beast. Again, the beast is no part of the woman, and the woman is no part of the beast. There's something connected with the woman, and there's something connected with the beast. And so the verses to follow are going to reveal who they are. The woman, of course, is Jerusalem. 17 and in verse 18, Revelation 17 and in verse 18, "The woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth." What is that great city? What's the city in which our Lord was crucified? Revelation 11 and verse 8. I don't know how you could get any plainer than that. Revelation 11 and verse 8, "And their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city. And here the woman whom you saw is that great city," the city in which our Lord was crucified. Now we could look at two or three other passages, but we've already been over those. So there's the woman, the city of Jerusalem, and then there's the beast. Again, it is the Roman Empire. Revelation 13 and verse 1, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horn 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name." So we have the beast, the Roman Empire, and the woman is riding on the beast. Now, ask yourself this. If a woman wasn't riding on the beast, and Rome is the woman, how would Rome exist without the beast? Do you understand what I'm saying? The Roman Empire is the beast. But the Roman Empire has a capital city, Rome. To speak of Rome is to speak of the Roman Empire. To speak of the Roman Empire is to speak of its capital city, Rome. But the woman is very distinct from the beast. They're not the same. And we'll see that as we continue. Revelation 17 and verse 8. "The beast that you saw," so he's going to identify the beast for us. Now, it might be hard for us to see the identifying characteristics of the beast because we're so far removed from the historical setting in which this was written. But the people of the first century would certainly see who the beast is by what is being revealed. Revelation 17 and verse 8. "The beast that you saw," note this, "the beast that you saw was," note this, "and is not." But jump all the way down to the end of the verse. "Yet is." So the beast that you saw was, and is not, and then at the end, and yet is. So at one point in history, the beast was. And then at one point in history, it was not. But then again, it is. So the beast that you saw was and is not. We've already talked about this some. This is explained by what was taking place at the time in history. Remember, at the time of the suicide of Nero Caesar in June of 68 AD, the Roman Empire virtually went out of existence for several months because they had no king. Oh, they did have a king. They had three. They had one that lasted for about 7 months, and then one that lasted about 95 days, and then another that lasted about 6 months. One right after the other, because each one was assassinated. Do you see that? The beast that you saw was. It existed. And think about this with the perspective of the Jewish people in the land of Canaan, or in the land of Israel. You have the Romans here fighting the Roman and Jewish wars. But then all of a sudden something happens. Civil war breaks out in Rome because they have no emperor. But one arises and he's assassinated, another rises and he's assassinated, another rises and he's assassinated. So the beast was, the Roman Empire was, and the Romans were fighting the Roman and Jewish wars. But Vespasian had to leave the battlefield, and he had to go and take the crown for himself. And so in quick succession, three emperors, Galba, Otho, and Vitellius, rose to power and were assassinated. Finally, Vespasian had to leave the battlefield, and through the ruthless actions of his legions, he took the imperial crown for himself. He then brought the empire back to a state of stability and power. So the beast that you saw was, the Roman Empire was, it existed, but it seemed not to exist. It seems as though it was going to be overthrown during its civil war period. But then it came back to life, so to speak. When did it come back to life? When Vespasian took the crown for himself and then sent Titus to finish the work that they had begun, destroy the Jews in the city of Jerusalem. So the beast that you saw was, the beast is the Roman Empire, and it is not. That's during the Civil War time period of Rome. And it will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. It will ascend out of the bottomless pit, symbolic of the empire returning with devilish determination to destroy the Jews in the city of Jerusalem. We saw this earlier back in Revelation 9 and in verse 1. The fifth angel sounded, I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. Revelation 11 and verse 7. When they finished their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit, Rome, will make war against them, overcome them, and kill them. Revelation 11 and verse 7, remember, those whom Rome kills are the law and the prophets. They destroy the law and the prophets when they destroy the city of Jerusalem. And the beast ascends out of the bottomless pit. So we have him ascending out of the bottomless pit here. So the beast that you saw and is not will ascend out of the bottomless pit, note this, and go to perdition. Go to perdition means to go to destruction. But to whose destruction does the beast go? Well, it does not explicitly say. So that must be determined by the context. The beast, of course, will eventually go to his own destruction. Revelation 19 and verse 20. Then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet who worked signs in the presence by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped in his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone. So the beast will eventually go to destruction. But in the context here, whose destruction is the beast going to? In the context here, he's not going to his own destruction. In the context, he's going to the destruction of the great harlot, the great city, Babylon the Great, the city of Jerusalem. Revelation 17 and in verse 8. Note, Revelation 17 and verse 8, same chapter, we see whose destruction he's going to. And the ten horns which you saw, and the beast, remember we looked at this last week, on the beast is literally and the beast. So the ten horns, of course, represent kings we're going to see later on. So those ten horns or ten kings which you saw and the beast, these will hate the harlot, they'll hate the woman, make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh and burn her with fire. So you see again, we see that If the beast is the Roman Empire, the beast, along with the ten horns, the ten kings in the context, are they going to hate Rome? Do you see what I'm saying? Revelation 17 and verse 6, the ten horns which you saw and the beast, these will hate the harlot. The word hate there means to pursue with hatred, persecute, make her desolate, lay her waste, bring her to ruin, depopulate her. So is the Roman Empire going to do that to the woman who is Rome in some people's mind? No. The Roman Empire is going to do that to the city of Jerusalem. That's exactly what the Roman Empire is going to do. Jesus said the Roman Empire was going to do it. Matthew chapter 24. Luke in Luke chapter 21. Mark chapter 13. So it's the Roman Empire who's going to do this. So in Revelation 17 and verse 8, the beast that you saw was and is not and will send out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition, go to destruction. He'll go to the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. That's where the beast is going. Note this, and those who dwell on the earth will marvel. Those who dwell upon the land, more literally, will marvel. Now why are they going to marvel? Because when Rome fell into its civil war period, they thought the Roman and Jewish wars was going to be over with. Vespasian left the battlefield. Oh, we've survived. It was probably God's plan because it gave opportunity for the Christians to flee from the city of Jerusalem. So those who dwell on the earth will marvel. Those who dwell upon the land, yes, they'll marvel because it seems as though the beast that was is not any longer. And so these who dwell upon our land are those whose names, note this, are not written in the book of life. So who are those who dwell upon the land of Israel, whose names are not written in the book of life? It's apostate Israel. It's the unbelieving Jews. That's who's under consideration. Whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. When they see the beast that was and is not and yet is, it's back alive, you might say. It's here. Vespasian has sent Titus to continue what they started. Revelation 17 and verse 9. Here is the man which has wisdom. Here is could be understood as this requires. We've seen this on several occasions. For example, in Revelation 13 and verse 10, he who leads into captivity should go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is, that is, this requires the patience and faith of the saints. So here in Revelation 17 and verse 9, here is, that is, this requires wisdom. Here is the man which has wisdom. This requires wisdom. What is wisdom? Well, it's taking the knowledge that one has and making application of it. And so here is the man which has wisdom. So he's going to identify the beast for the people in the first century. They would clearly see who it is because he's going to identify the beast by the kings of the beast. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Note that. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. There are also seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come, and when he comes, he must continue a short time. Now follow me here. Pay close attention. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Look at the first part of verse 10. There are also seven kings. Now, some of you are reading the English Standard Version here. Some of you might be reading American Standard Version, New American Standard Bible. I'm going to point out a couple of things here. If you got a pencil, you might want to note this. In verse 10, first of all, there are also seven kings. There are, that phrase in the Greek, there are. Well, before I get to that, let me say this. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. A great misunderstood statement from the book of Revelation. Many, of course, see the woman, again, as Rome, because Rome literally sat on seven mountains or seven hills. An undisputed fact. But the mountains or hills here are not literal mountains or hills. Note the beginning of verse 10. There are also seven kings. There are, in the Greek, is third person plural. Literally, it reads, they are. They are. And the word also is literally in the Greek, a Greek conjunction. That's most oftentimes translated and over 8,000 times in the New Testament. So here's how the New American Standard Bible translates the phrase in verse 10. And they are seven kings. And they are seven kings. The New American Standard Bible renders it exactly the same way. The English Standard Version says they are. Also, seven kings. New International Version renders it exactly the same way. They are also seven kings. So, do you see what's actually being said? The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And they are seven kings. The seven mountains aren't seven mountains or seven hills. They are seven kings. That's what the passage says. Now, if you don't agree with me, then you can disagree with those who rendered the American Standard Version and New American Standard Bible, the English Standard Version and New International Version. Because they say the mountains are seven kings. And that's what the passage clearly says. Now, the reason I bring that up is because a lot of people put a lot of stock in the woman being Rome and sitting on seven mountains or seven hills. But again, the passage literally does not say that. The seven mountains are seven kings. And what does John do? Or what does the angel do? He goes on to give John the mystery behind those seven kings. Note this, Revelation 17 and verse 9 again, the seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And they are seven kings. Five have fallen. The word fallen simply means they've died. Luke 21 and verse 24. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations. They'll fall by the edge of the sword. They'll die by the edge of the sword. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 8. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, if some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. 23,000 died. So five have fallen means five of these kings out of the seven have already died. Well, it's no great mystery. We can check the history books. As a matter of fact, there was a Roman historian. I can't pronounce his name. Seutonius. He lived from 69 AD to 150. Now this Roman historian gives the first five kings of the Roman Empire. Julius Caesar, Augustus Caesar, Tiberius Caesar, Caligula Caesar, and Claudius Caesar. Now that's a Roman himself, Roman historian. And Josephus He also, in his Antiquities of the Jews, refers to Augustus Caesar and Tiberius Caesar as the second and third Caesar, which by necessary inference makes Julius Caesar the first Roman emperor. And so people who lived during that particular period of time said this is who the five kings were. And so the woman is riding the Roman Empire. The woman is sitting on the beast, the Roman Empire. The woman is the city of Jerusalem. She's riding on the back of the Roman Empire. And this Roman Empire, during this particular period of time, is identified by its kings. Five have fallen. Let's read on. Five have fallen. One is. Well, if five kings have died already, one is. One is present. One is alive. Who would be the sixth king of the Roman Empire? Anybody know? Nero Caesar. According to the Roman historian I just read a few moments ago, Nero Caesar, he's the one is. Now that tells me that if the sixth king of the Roman Empire, one is, he existed during the time of the writing of the book of Revelation. It tells me the book of Revelation must have been written before he died or committed suicide in June of 68 A.D. So Nero Caesar is number six, but let's read on. Five have fallen. One is, who is Nero Caesar. Note this. And the other has not yet come. That's because Nero Caesar is ruling and reigning when this book is written. And the other has not yet come. The other would be number what? What comes after six? The other would be number seven. But the other has not yet come, and when he comes, know this, he must continue a short time. Now, who was the king that came to power after Nero Caesar? What about those three kings we've been reading about? Galba, Ortho, and Vitellius. Now, which one is number seven? Well, you pick one of them, because neither one of them lasted very long at all. Do you see the phrase? He must continue a short time. Each one of them continued a very short time. So pick Galba, pick Ortho, pick Vitellius. But one of them is number seven. Okay, so after Galba, Ortho, and Vitellius, that comes to the eighth king then, doesn't it? Revelation 17 and in verse 11. The beast that was and is not, note this, so the beast that was, the Roman Empire that was, but is not, it fell into civil war, and is not, is himself also the eighth, and is of the seven, and is going to perdition. Who's the eighth emperor of Rome? Vespasian. He is of the seven. He's right along with the seven emperors. The seven mountains are seven kings. That's what the passage says. The seven mountains, they are seven kings. American Standard Version, New American Standard Bible. Can't press that enough. You need to make a note of that in your Bible. They are seven kings. And so he identifies. The people living during this time period would know who the first five kings were. And they would know who number six was. Now they wouldn't know who number seven and number eight was yet. Because when things happen, they'll be able to recognize it though. And they'll be able to identify the beast by those kings. So Revelation 17 and verse 11, the beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth and is of the seven, and he is going to perdition. That is, he's going to destruction. That is, he's going to the destruction of the great harlot. Same thing it was said previous. He's going to the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. Of course, Vespasian's not going to go. He's going to send his son Titus to finish the work. So the eighth emperor was Vespasian. He reigned from 69 to 79. And he commanded his son Titus to finish what they had started, the defeat of the Jews and the destruction of Jerusalem. Titus, being the son of Vespasian, then, after Vespasian, would reign from 79 to 81. And then Domitian, the son of Vespasian as well, and the younger brother of Titus, would reign from 81 to 96. So we see who the first five kings are, and the first five kings are dead. The people in the first century would know who the first five kings of the Roman Empire is, and they would know who number six is. That's how the beast was identified for these people. They understood it. Revelation 17 and verse 12. The ten horns which you saw, note this, are ten kings, like the seven mountains. Seven mountains are seven kings. So the ten horns are not literal horns, but they represent ten kings. Note this, who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. So the ten horns represent ten kings who have received no kingdom as yet. The word translated kingdom here means that they really don't have any kingly power. They don't have any royal power. They don't have any royal dominion. They don't have any royal rule. They really don't have a kingdom to rule over. As a matter of fact, the word translated kingdom here is translated reign in verse 17. We'll see later on. So these ten kings who have received no kingdom, they haven't really received any kingly power. Who would these ten kings be? They're not ten kings of the Roman Empire. They're ten vassal kings. They're kings in name only. In the Roman Empire, there was but one king, Caesar. But Caesar and the Roman Empire allowed some of the procurators, that is, those who governed certain states, to take the title as king, like Herod the Great, Herod Antipas, Herod Agrippa. They had the title king, but they were not kings. Rome allowed them to have the title king. They had no kingly power, no royal power, no royal dominion. Rome simply gave them, you might say, a title to make them feel important. They were vassal states. And these vassal states, they submitted to Rome. So the ten horns which you saw are ten kings who've received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour. From whom would they get their authority? They'd get their authority from Rome, from Caesar himself. He would give them the title king, but he was the only king. And they would get that authority for 1 hour. 1 hour simply means for a short period of time, because people like this, they didn't stay in office very long unless they really pleased Caesar. So they were given authority for 1 hour, a short period of time, as kings with the beast. And these are of one mind, one purpose, one aim, one intent. And they will give their power and authority to the beast, to the Roman Empire, because these vassal states would join with the Romans in destroying apostate Israel in the city of Jerusalem. That's where Rome would gather its forces from Egypt and Africa and Asia and ancient Greece and places like that. That's the kings under consideration. Now note, in chapter 17 and verse 14, These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. These who? Well, pointing back in the context, the kings along with the beast, the 10 kings along with the Roman Empire. All of these are going to make war with the Lamb. Now, how would you make war with the Lamb? How would you do that? Well, you could go to war against God's people. That's how you would do it. And the Jewish people were considered God's people, and the city of Jerusalem was considered the city of God. It was where the temple was. And so these, the 10 kings, the vassal state kings, along with the beast, the Roman Empire, they make war with the Lamb. They go to war against God's people, Israel, and the city of Jerusalem. And the Lamb will overcome them. He'll be victorious over them. Why? For he is Lord of lords and King of kings. He is the highest king. And those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. That is, they're Christians. But the point is the beast, along with the kings, make war with the Lamb. And they do this by making war with his people and the city. But the Lamb would be victorious over them because they will actually be carrying out his will. They don't recognize it. The Roman Empire is actually carrying out the will of Christ, actually carrying out the will of God in the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. But the Roman Empire actually goes to war against the Lord. Do you see how that works? The Roman Empire goes to war against the Lord, against the city of Jerusalem, and against the people of Israel, God's people. Now the Lord, of course, is using them to destroy that. And that's how he becomes victorious. That's how he overcomes them. Because he uses them to bring about his purpose, his aim, his intent. We're out of time. We'll have to stop here. Questions or comments? Confusing, isn't it? I hope I've muddied the water for you so you'll study. We'll pick up here then, Revelation 17, about verse 15 next Wednesday evening. Thank you very much for your kind attention.